I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love: books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
This episode of LiveWire is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you can call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Hello and welcome to another episode of LiveWire. I am your host, Luke Burbank. Hope you are having a great week. We have a really fun, informative radio show in store for you. Our guests include Mary Norris. She's known as the Comma Queen. You might have known her from her books or her work at The New Yorker. We also have Ryan O'Connell coming by. He is a writer and a somewhat reluctant actor who stars in this new Netflix show called Special, which is sort of autobiographical to his life as a gay man who also has cerebral palsy. And then one of our favorite comedians of all time, a frequent guest on the show, Jackie Cation, will be taking the stage. And we have music from The Get Ahead. The theme that we picked for the show this week is figure of speech. We also asked the audience at the Alberta Rose Theater what their favorite word is and why. And as I was thinking about that question that we posed to the audience, I realized it's actually not maybe a very easy question to answer because it kind of depends on how you define your favorite word. Anyway, I was talking about this whole thing on stage with our announcer, Elena Passarello, at the Alberta Rose Theater at the top of the show. Let's pick things up there. I have to say, Elena, that for me, my favorite word would be nap. Because I love napping. Right. I don't think nap itself is a beautiful word, but the implication is one that I'm really into. If I was thinking of the word that is most beautiful or that I love for its beauty, I would go with mellifluous. I do not know what it means. I think it might be an Angelina Jolie movie, but it sounds really good. Mellifluous?
Mellifluous. I wonder if you could take a mellifluous nap.
Oh, I have. What are your favorite words?
So word that the meaning is my favorite is snacks.
Ah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it sounds like what it is. You know, it's happy, it's fun, it's delicious, it's cute, snacks. And word that I just like the way it looks is giggle.
Oh, yeah.
But only giggle in typeface. When the G's go like kook, 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 at the bottom, like kook, 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 you know, and they look like little giggles the way they pool at the bottom underneath the G's.
What are the listeners and the folks visiting us here at the Alberta Rose Theater saying
their favorite
word is? I
got to tell you something, Burbank. The audience is schooling us in terms of awesome words.
These Nobody are else some, picked nap?
No. These are some SAT mother truckers out here. Here's one. It's from Jennifer. Jennifer's favorite word is capybara. And Jennifer says, for her why, I hope that after we have destroyed our planet, the largest rodent in the world takes over. Go rodents!
Most of my social media feed now is just adorable animals.
Oh, yeah.
I've slowly curated my social media feed to just be not the news, just capybaras, and it's working.
That you could teach a TED Talk on how to make that happen.
What else you got?
How about I tell you there are only three words that more than one person mentioned.
Ah, I like this.
The first one is petrichor. Very, very Pacific Northwest word.
What does that mean?
Petrichor is the smell after rain, after it's been dry for a long time.
There's a name for that? Mm-hmm.
It's mold awakening in the soil.
Like, I don't want to get dark, but I'm just saying if I passed away right now, I'd be okay with it, knowing that information. Because my whole life, living in the Northwest, I have known what that, I've known that smell. I never knew there was a word for it.
That's petrichor. It's part of the water cycle. I only know that because poets, that's one of those words that poets are always putting into their poems.
Like, there once was a man from petrichor.
Yeah. the other one of three, discombobulate. And the third, impeach.
This audience never ceases to not surprise me. Hey, we've got somebody waiting off stage who thinks about words a lot. He wrote a great memoir, I'm Special and Other Lies We Tell Ourselves. And he's also got a hilarious Netflix show called Special, which he wrote every episode of and plays the lead in. Please welcome the multi-talented Ryan O'Connell to Livewire. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Love.
Okay, this show, Special, is really great. It's been getting a ton of attention to some degree because it tells a story of a gay man who also has cerebral palsy, which is your real-life story. Growing up, what kind of impact did having cerebral palsy have on your life just as a kid? What was it like for you?
I mean, it like, wasn't the best. I wouldn't recommend, like, 0 out of 10. I mean, it was very, like, strange days, honey. Like, it was, like, me at school with, like, my able-bodied friends, like, playing at the monkey bars, like, goodnight. And then, like, and then I'd go to, like, physical therapy and get stretched by some, like, butch lesbian named Jandy, and then that would be it. Like, and then it would, like, you know, like, be, like, in leg braces. Like, it was just, my life was very, like, split down the middle. There was, like, my able-bodied life and then my disabled life, and it was very confusing.
I know that you've said in other interviews, and it seems pretty clear on the show, that being gay was kind of low on the list of worries that you had.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, look, when I first realized I was gay, like 12, like, I'm not going to lie, I didn't love that for me. It wasn't, like, the first thing I would have picked. But
was it really Ryan Phillippe that just, like, locked it in?
His ass and cruel intentions. I think we all know. I think even you know, Luke.
I did. Some part of me stirred when I saw that.
I think everyone stirred. Absolutely. So, that wasn't, like, my first choice for sure, but I come from a very gay family, so I knew everyone would accept me for that, so that was, like, no big deal.
Did you really make, like, a short film to come out?
So I've always had a flair for the theatrics. you know, mama loves a stage. So basically I kind of came out to like a bunch of my friends and then I was like so exhausted like by the manual labor of it all. I had like 20 names to still knock off the list. So I was like, why don't I just throw a coming out party for myself? So I just like sent a text to everyone being like, come to my party for a secret that will change all our lives forever. And then I made little gift bangs, you know, very creative, gay, et cetera, et cetera. And then I recorded a video with my little camcorder, like Blair Witch Project style, with my friend Katie. And we just, like, it started with us slow dancing, and she goes in for a kiss. And I'm like, no! I'm like, I can't do it. And she's like, why not? Don't you find me attractive? I'm like, I do. It's just, I'm gay, bitches! And then I turned to the camera. And then everyone in the audience was like, what? Like, they were stunned, which is, like, kind of lol, because I'm like, really? You were
stunned?
Wait.
The audience of friends that you made come over to your house and
gathered them around the TV.
They sat around the TV and you said, watch this.
Yeah, like, watch this little reveal.
And they were surprised to learn that the person who had orchestrated this event was, in fact, a gay man.
By the way, I think... I know, but honey, that's Ventura, California for you, honey. We're behind. I'm from Ventura. Anyway, so we all danced to like moving units and called it a day.
we're talking to Ryan O'Connell. His Netflix show is Special. I know that Beverly Hills 90210 was a big show in your life as a kid, and then you were a writer on the reboot of Beverly Hills 90210. Like, was your mind just blown every day that you're actually helping create the next version of this thing that you grew up, like, loving?
It was surreal, but it also wasn't my first time at the reboot rodeo. I also wrote for Will and Grace, so I was in this weird position where, like, both shows I've idolized, I've, like, worked on, so I feel like... it's very relatable, I know. Very, very relatable content I'm giving you right now. I'm like, no, it was nothing. No, it was amazing. It was amazing being able to, like, be face-to-face with these people that I grew up kind of idolizing and were so formative. I mean, I watched Beverly Hills 90210 at a very inappropriate age, like age 4. It came out in 89. It came out in 89, and I was born in 86. And I was straight up watching it when I was 3 or 4. And so, you know, when you're younger, your brain is a sponge and you can, like, learn other languages.
Yeah.
I didn't learn another language. I just learned Beverly Hills 90210. So, like,
right,
there are things to this day that I just...
You learned fluent Aaron spelling.
No, seriously, like, there's, like, Exorcist style. I'm, like, literally, like, I'll have, like, a flash. I'm like, oh, yeah, Brandon lost his virginity to Cheryl, who he met in Minnesota, season 1. And I'm like, what had to die in order for that to live? Like,
yeah, right.
Seriously, like, there is so much real estate in my brain that's just Beverly Hills 90210, and then the rest is just, like, cobwebs and blank spaces. Like, yeah. I don't get it. It scares me to think of what I've forgotten so I could remember, like, Emily Valentine, like, trying to burn down a float. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyways, let's purge.
Let's take a break. We have Ryan O'Connell here. His Netflix show is Special. This is LiveWire from PRI. We will be right back. LiveWire is supported in part by Fully. Based in Portland, Oregon, Fully is an amazing company that sells and distributes things that will help you feel healthier while you are being productive doing your work. How do I know this? Well, because I use a Jarvis standing desk from Fully when I am on stage recording LiveWire. That's right. I can set that thing at any different height that works for me in that moment. It keeps the blood flowing, keeps me feeling engaged. I think you can hear the results, my friends, coming through the radio and the podcast. If you would like to stay healthy and productive while you're being productive at your work, whether it's at home or in the office, you got to check out what the folks at Fully are doing. Go to fully.com/livewire. That's fully.com/livewire. They've also got the Cooper Standing Desk Converter. That gives you the ability to set your desk at any height you want as well. And just figure out a spot that works for you. I promise it'll make a difference in your work productivity and how good you'll feel at the end of the day. I know it has for me. I also use the TikTok stool when I'm at home doing all of my radio show writing projects. It's made such a difference for me and for our whole LiveWire staff, and I know you're going to have the same experience. So again, find out what Fully has got going on by heading over to Fully, that's FULLY.com/LiveWire. Hey, welcome back to LiveWire from PRI. I'm Luke Burbank. We have Elena Passarello here as well. We're at the Alberta Rose Theater in Portland. We are talking to writer and actor Ryan O'Connell. His new Netflix series is Special. To me, one of the more unexpected parts of your story that happens in the Netflix show but is real to what happened in your life was that you were basically able to pretend and sort of lie that you were, in fact, not disabled for a significant chunk of your 20s. How does somebody even do that?
Yeah, okay, so here's the deal. So I got hit by a car when I was 20, which, like, was such a deep troll. Like, I thought for sure, like, being gay and disabled...
Ryan, can I translate for people?
Sure.
When he says it was a deep troll being hit by a car, it doesn't mean, like, a troll hit you.
No.
It was, like, life trolling you.
Let's
give this guy cerebral palsy,
yeah,
and then let's hit him with a car.
Like, I thought I was done. Like, I thought I was, like, fit. I was like, okay, gay, disabled, like, I'm good for the rest of my life, right? And it's like, JK. So I was not loving that. And then I moved to New York and I was like really, really saddled with these feelings of like, oh my God, I'm going to meet all these new people and I'm going to have to explain. Oh, people are going to be like, oh, why are you limping? And I'm like, well, that's my cerebral palsy. And they're like, well, what's this scar on your arm? I'm like, well, that's because I was hit by a car. And I just, you know, call me crazy, but being the new kid, I didn't want to leave with that. And so basically I moved to New York and someone just assumed my limp was from my accident. And it never occurred to me that I could actually do that. And so then I just decided to rewrite my identity as an accident victim and throw cerebral palsy into a dumpster. That's what I did. And I thought I kind of created this giant life hack. I was like, ha ha, sucker. Like, I'll see you later, cerebral cerebral palsy. Don't call me ever again. But really what I was doing is I was denying a big part of my identity, and that causes problemos, you know?
What was it like the first time where you realized, oh, I'm actually misleading someone about kind of what's going on with me? And like, did you feel like, okay, this is a fork in the road? Like, I'm just gonna like basically lie about where these symptoms are coming from.
Well, I mean, I just feel like as my 20s went on, I feel like the first couple of years I was like an accident victim. I was like living, laughing, and loving. But then like the middle of my 20s, I was like not living, laughing, and loving. And I was just kind of like lame as a rob. But I don't think I connected the reason why I was miserable was because I was denying my cerebral palsy. But anyway, so I got a book deal to write about my life. Again, very relatable content.
Because you were writing a blog, and so you were constantly mining your own experience and writing about it, and you got this book deal, but it was not to write about being secretly disabled.
Right. I sold them the stupid, like, how to be 20-something Urban Outfitters book. Like, it was actual trash. I can't believe they bought it, LOL. But anyway, I realized, like, in the thick of, like, my misery, oh, like, Ryan, like, maybe you should talk about your cerebral palsy because it's, like, bad that you don't? ? Like, I don't think I, like, really understood it. I feel like sometimes you have these weird brief moments of clarity when you're in the thick of, like, the I hate myself fair. So I went to Simon & Schuster, like, the day of our cook-off meeting, and I was like, oh, actually, they were like, I have a title for your book, I'm Special. And I'm like, LOL that you say that, because I'm special in more ways than one.
So they did not understand that you had cerebral palsy.
They didn't know. They thought I was just good. Yeah. I mean, they thought I got hit by a car. I mean, like, it just doesn't come up. Here's why it was, like, a perfect lie. No one comes up to you and is like, hey, how's the cerebral palsy going? Like, people don't know what it looks like. So if you just say you got hit by a car, you got hit by a car. No one's going to be, like, investigative CP reporter being like, I don't think so. The story doesn't track. Liar. Burn them at the stake. You know what I mean? Like, that's not how our world works.
So you go to this meeting with Simon & Schuster, and they've given you this book deal, and you're supposed to write one kind of book, one of these very, you know, ephemeral, just
tell-all
kind of thing. And then you were like, at this point, you had emotionally arrived at this point in your journey where you were like,
right,
I need to actually just come out as a disabled person.
Yeah, and they were thrilled. I think it just like made the book chicer and had more depth. So they were like, great, off to the races. But I really fooked myself, though, because like, I know you can't really curse on this show, so I'm being very...
Thank you.
Like, I basically was undoing, like, all this trauma, and, like I had repressed so many memories from being disabled, and now I'm supposed to write a book about it? Like usually people go to therapy. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway.
By the way, if you're just tuning in, we're listening and talking to Ryan O'Connell. He has a show on Netflix called Special. I think it's a compelling idea for a show, and it's taken from your real experience.
Yeah.
And it took how long to actually get this show made?
It took 4 years, which like, yeah, too long.
Yeah.
Way too long.
And is it really because just people thought there's not an audience for this type of programming?
Yeah, I think the culture just needed to catch up. I think in 2015, people were like just really registering that like women were funny. They were like, Amy Schumer, she's crazy, and she has things to say. Like, that's where we were at in 2015, so, like, gay disabled was, like, down the list. Like, it was, like, literally, they're just processing Amy Schumer being funny.
Right.
And they're like, I don't get it, because she's not a size 2. Like, confusing.
Right.
Anyway, so like, they weren't ready for this jelly, to say the least. Yeah. But it was really disappointing because like, we went out and we like obviously murdered the pitches. Like, it was amazing.
Yeah.
And then everyone was like, we're making an offer, and then they all got cold feet. But I really believe in timing and like the zeitgeist and all that stuff. And basically, we ended up going to this digital branch of Warner Brothers called Stage 13 that was doing short form content, and they commissioned me to write 8 15-minute episodes. So that's what I did. And then we sent the scripts to Netflix, and Netflix bought it.
I think you're really great in the show. I think you're pretty good at playing a gay disabled man named Ryan.
Oh.
In the show. I can't believe you weren't going to act in the show originally.
Well, I think I never thought of myself as like an actor. You know, it's funny, like as a marginalized person, like I think you're always instructed to like be like, oh, I don't want to take up too much space. And to want something, you almost feel bad. So I felt like I was wanting a lot just by wanting my own TV show, but my life experiences, that felt almost indulgent. So to say that I wanted to star in it, ooh, that's too much. That's crazy. So I think I had to really, I think like now looking back at it, like I always did want to do it, but I just never gave myself permission to want those things. But now I have no problem problem being the girl with the most cake.
All right, Ryan, here at LiveWire, we like to try to get to know our guests on a deeply personal level. I feel like we've already been doing that. I still feel, though, like we could maybe get to know you on an even more personal level. So here in my hands, I have a jar. In it are the five essential questions of our time. We call this exercise the Jar of Truth.
I'm triggered. What's...
Here's how this is going to work. Our announcer, Elena Passarella, she's going to pull out a question from the Jar of Truth. Ryan, she is going to read this question to you, and we need your honest, truthful response.
Okay.
We are all doing our best. Is it okay to wear actual pajamas to the office under any circumstances?
No. I don't. I worked from home for many years, and I feel like I would get depressed if I, like, went full slob kebab.
Yes, but that dynamic maybe is somewhat informed by the fact that you're working at home. What about going to an office environment where we all want to be more comfortable? If someone shows up to the writer's room of Special...
Oh, my God, as if I would fire them immediately. Are you kidding me? Just because we're writers doesn't mean we can't be chic. Like, hello? No, I vote no. Is this a voting thing? I vote no.
Hey, you're the sole vote.
Yeah, you're...
Well, then, honey, it passed.
Yeah.
Is that controversial? I don't know. Is Portland, like, very pro-pajams? I mean, I feel like if this was L.A., people would be like, I hear you, but you guys are, like, very down to earth, and you're like, wait, we left pajamas. Like, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. Like, there must be, like, a middle ground between, like, pajamas and then, like, whatever. Like,
there is a whole, like, world of women's clothing that's basically formal pajamas.
Well,
just gauzy,
you know,
elastic
waist. I'm into that. I love athleisure.
Yeah.
Like, I just love wearing, like, my Nike shorts, like, everywhere.
Yeah.
So I kind of understand. Pajamas are just, like, a triggering concept to me. But maybe, like, my Nike shorts are my pajamas. And maybe I need to unpack that.
Generous.
We got there, everyone.
Yeah.
You want to do another one?
Sure.
I feel like you really nailed that one, Ryan. Elena is selecting a question from the Jar of Truth.
Okay. Where do you stand, Ryan O'Connell, on the great debate of our times, answering thank you with no worries rather than you're welcome? Is that chill or chillingly rude?
That's not rude. I think I say no worries a lot.
Really?
Oops. Wait. So someone says thank you.
Yeah.
And you say no worries. Why is that wrong? I'm sorry. Is this a cultural thing again? I'm confused.
I would say I don't write these questions, but I have noticed that if somebody says no worries to me, my brain would go, oh, am I supposed to be worried?
Yeah.
Like, when I say something that I mean to be probably overly polite, or if I'm moving through a restaurant and I bump into someone and I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry, and they go, no worries, I feel like they're giving me permission to not be worried about it.
That really sounds like a personal problem, Luke. Like, I don't understand. Like, clearly you have stuff to work out, XOXO, yeah. Best of luck with your projects.
Ryan O'Connell, everyone, his new show is Special. LiveWire is brought to you in part by Alaska Airlines. Now, people may think Alaska Airlines only flies from cold to colder, but with 1,200 daily flights and 118 destinations, Alaska Airlines is a gateway from the West Coast to the world. Learn more at alaskaairlines.com. Hey, it's Luke. Don't go anywhere. Because coming up, we have grammar expert Mary Norris. She's known as the comma queen. And she actually got the New Yorker magazine to pay for her to take college classes studying Greek back when she worked there.
This guy, the executive editor, he said, I don't really see what ancient Greek has to do with your job on the copy desk per se.
I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't even totally get that joke when she made it. Later I figured out, because the guy was using Greek to say that they didn't eat Greek at the New Yorker. If you got that joke, though, you are very much going to enjoy our conversation with Mary Norris here on LiveWire from PRI. This is LiveWire Radio from PRI. My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host. We're coming to you this week from the Alberta Rose Theater in Portland, Oregon. And we asked the audience here in the room to tell us what their favorite word is and why. Our theme this week is figure of speech. Elena Passarello, our announcer, you've been gathering up some of those submissions. What are the folks here in the theater, what words are they fans of?
Well, I'd like to call this round Audience Cards German Edition.
Okay.
Okay, so Margaret's favorite word is Bezirkrankenhaus.
That is the coolest club in downtown Portland. The Bezirkrankenhaus.
Bezirkrankenhaus is the German word for insane asylum.
Got to give it to the Germans. I have a rudimentary understanding of the language, but it feels like they just keep stacking words on other words until they've accurately described whatever the thing is.
Like Schadenfreude,
yes.
Right?
The feeling of happiness you get from the sadness of someone else.
Yeah, I love that word.
Yeah.
I love Schadenfreude. Delia's favorite word is Themawechsel, which is German for topic change and is very useful for when a conversation takes a boring turn and you want to quickly change the topic so you can start talking about something else. For example, when people are talking about sports.
Oh, man. Okay, one more.
Here's one from Roger. Roger's favorite word is yes. Good to say and good to hear.
Wow.
Good job, Roger.
This is LiveWire Radio from PRI. I'm Luke Burbank with Elena Passarello. We are at the Alberta Rose Theater in Portland, Oregon. We're talking about the topic of figure of speech this week. Our comedian this hour saw her most recent comedy album, I Am Not the Hero of This Story, go to number one on iTunes, despite covering the Laugh Riot topics of genocide, the death of her mother, the death of her stepmother, the near death of her father. She's also the host of the wonderful and long-running podcast, The Dork Forest. Please welcome a LiveWire favorite, Jackie Cation, back to the show.
Hello, Portland, Oregon. Hello, LiveWire audience. Yes, I am, this is a middle-aged white lady. That's what this is. You're listening to a middle-aged white lady. Here's the weird thing about that. I never knew I was white. Possibly the whitest thing I've ever said. Why? Because I'm from Wisconsin. Let's talk about it. In Wisconsin, if someone were to say to me, I'm white, I promise you, I would say back to that person, did you mean Polish? Did you mean German? Did you mean Italian? Because I know exactly what this is. This is a middle-aged white lady, and when I was a tiny middle-aged white lady, I was told exactly what I was made up of in Wisconsin, which is old-school peasant stock from all sides. This is literally half Irish, half Armenian. That's what I was told as a tiny child. I have been genetically modified to pick up a rock on someone else's property. That's what I was told as a child. And I grew up knowing that. And now that I know that I'm a middle-aged white lady, I know that my job is to confront other meaner, stupider white people. It can be done. I can do it. I don't like confrontation. And the reason I don't like confrontation, for several reasons. One, of course, is I'm a giant, hippie, skippy, bleeding heart liberal. And I've been one since the dawn of man. I have been a crystal clutcher and a big hippie, skippy person forever. Back in the 80s, I used to say Nicaragua. Yeah. I have been insufferable for decades. So I don't want to have confrontations, but I also don't want to do it because I'm an American. I have no interest. I would like to hire someone. I'm an Amazon Prime member. I've already paid for shipping. Does no one care? Someone fix this. But I'm willing to do it for a couple of reasons. One, I think I was raised to do it. And second of all, I've recently found out that middle-aged white ladies are invincible. We cannot be killed. We also will not shut up. The look that I am rocking right here is very much a hashtag Peppermint Patty. This has interrupted a barbecue or made a child stop having a lemonade stand, because this look is a nightmare look for anyone who's a person of color. I'm going to call the cops is what this looks like. And with this look comes great responsibility that I am willing to take into consideration, especially since I found out that we can't be killed. Last summer, I was in Yellowstone National Park, very beautiful Yellowstone National Park. Four different middle-aged white ladies the week that I was there, different women, different parts of the park, different days of that week, tried to pet wild animals. Four women, four 50-year-old women, three women tried to pet bison, one woman tried to pet a moose. None of them died. They all should have died. There's a sign every 2 feet in Yellowstone National Park that says, do not pet the wild animals. And these four women were like, sure, but not me, it's me, Kimberly. So hide behind this, for it cannot be murdered. The reason I was raised to do this is because I'm of Armenian ancestry, and my grandmother lived through the Armenian genocide. When the Turks came to her tiny village to empty everybody out, they didn't have any time, and so they were rousted out of their homes and into the streets, and she said there was rousted so quickly there was bread in the oven. 60 years later, she was still worried about it. I'm pretty sure it burned. Okay. But she told me that the Turkish general in charge of her village told her family that they could keep their family donkey. They were going to keep their family donkey, and my grandmother's grandmother was going to ride that donkey out into the world. And the village priest of the Armenian church stole the donkey so that he could ride it. And my grandmother was 16, and she took a 2x4 and beat the priest off of the donkey. And she told me that story when I was 19, and I told her I didn't want to go to church anymore. She said, I go to church, you'll go to church. And so it came to pass. Anyway, so... And I try to be a good role model. I'm not particularly good at it. I live in Los Angeles. It's not very hard. But I've had four different youths in the last year, four different younger up-and-coming comics have said to my face in the last year, I am an empath. Like Mantis from Guardians of the Galaxy. Like Deanna Troi from Star Trek The Next Generation. Like a demon from Buffy the... No, you aren't. You made eye contact with someone who was crying. Someone looked up from their phone and you were there. Live it up. One of my friends, this guy said to me, he said, no, it's more than that. It's like when someone else's dog dies, I feel it just as bad as they do. And I said, wow, do you feel the waves of hostility coming off of me? Do you feel that? Because the word you're thinking of is narcissism. And... And I love the next generation. I love all the people in the world. I'm on board. But they were all millennials, and people give guff to a lot of millennials. I'm Gen X myself. We got guff. But I have never seen the pile of guff that millennials have gotten. It is a pile of avocado toast that you people are being buried underneath. But the only... Who doesn't love avocado toast? Here's my favorite, though. That doesn't make any sense, but have you heard that millennials don't know how to read maps? Do you hear about that? They don't know how to read maps, you guys. We're always looking at their devices. They don't know how to read maps. We used to read maps all the time. In the 80s, we used to read maps. They don't know how to read them. They're always looking at their devices. I have this to say. I was there in the 80s. There was some map usage. Not as much as has been reported. We mostly use people. I'd call you. I'd say, I live here, you live there. How do I get there? I'd write down the directions on a piece of paper. I'd leave that piece of paper on the kitchen table. I'd get into my car. I'd drive as far as I remembered. I'd pull over, I'd put 20 to 35 cents into a phone, and I'd call you again. Where do you live from here, I'd say. So you are not fighting a pile of Magellans. We don't know how to read the stars either. If I see a tree and it has moss on it, I absolutely never think to myself, Portland, north. I think dirty tree. Thanks a lot, you guys.
Jackie Cation, everybody. Our next guest is one of America's foremost figures in speech, or at least when it comes to how we should be using words. She was a copy editor and proofreader at The New Yorker for more than 30 years. Her book, Between You and Me, Confessions of a Comma Queen, was a New York Times bestseller. Now she's out with Greek to Me, Adventures of the Comma Queen. Please welcome international grammar star Mary Norris to LiveWire. Mary, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Is grammar star an oxymoron?
Yes, absolutely. My fame is in this pocket of the world that is labeled grammar, you know?
Well, the pocket is strong here in Portland because people have been so excited that you're going to be on the show. And it's so interesting because your writing is about words and it's about word usage and grammar. Did you ever see this coming? Growing up in Cleveland, a lover of words, I mean, did you think, oh yeah, this is going to lead me to the bright lights of the public radio stage?
I always wanted to be a writer, and I got a job so that I could pay the rent, and that job was copy editor. And when I was asked to write about commas, I thought, oh no, don't make me. And then it turned out this piece about commas ran on the New Yorker's website, and it went viral. And then it was, would you write about semicolons, and would you write about dashes? And then it was my idea to write about pencils. So another topic of great interest.
Yeah. This latest book is about the Greek language and also your love of the nation of Greece. When did you first become fascinated with the Greek language?
I had this idea I wanted to go to Greece after seeing the movie Time Bandits. Well, it's
so good.
It's a great movie. You know, yeah. It's Terry Gilliam, right? And the premise of the movie is that these little people go to the past to plunder the treasure from the past. And there's one scene where they go to ancient Greece, and Sean Connery is there as Agamemnon, and he's dueling with the Minotaur. And it was lovely to watch, but what I really loved was the background. It was just sky and the earth was not green and rich or lush. It was just like sand. I wanted to go there. And I did find out that they shot that movie in Morocco. Oh, well.
Did you get the New Yorker to pay for your, to basically study the Greek language at Columbia University?
Well, I first started studying modern Greek at NYU,
okay.
And the New Yorker had always had a policy of paying employees tuition if the employees took a course in something that was related to their work. Mm. And, the modern Greek course was fairly cheap. But when I came back and I went to Greece, I had a wonderful time. I fell in love with the Aegean, and I wanted to read ancient Greek after I came back. And then, so I enrolled in a course in ancient Greek at Columbia, and I submitted the bill, and they balked. Yeah. It cost a bit more to go to Columbia than it does to take a night class. So this guy, the executive editor, he said, I don't really see what ancient Greek has to do with your job on the copy desk, per se. but that's when I started keeping a dossier of words that came through the copy desk that had Greek roots. I wrote them a letter with all these words in it, and I got the head grammarian to write a letter to say that, yes, ancient Greek is, in fact, useful on the copy desk. She said that, you know, once in a while there's a Greek word in the magazine, and she wasn't sure that her knowledge of Greek was current enough to keep us from making ignorant mistakes.
Nice.
So that was it.
Did you feel like you fit in there, Mary? You came from Cleveland. You were always a fan of, you know, of the English language. You always studied it. But, I mean, that's some pretty erudite company, right, to be at the New Yorker and then to be telling the writers for the New Yorker that they're doing it wrong.
Well, I worked my way up to that. I started out in what is called the editorial library. They would index the magazine. So it was definitely an entry-level job. Instead of helping put the magazine together, we actually took it apart with single-edge razor blades and pasted it in scrapbooks. And we did this thing. We indexed the cartoons. We'd flip through the magazine, and there were four of us, and look at the cartoons and decide what they were about.
Oh, my God. You had to create a category?
Yeah, they
had to be
indexed.
A pig trying to return a present to the Gimbel's counter.
Yes.
So you were down there doing that, and you eventually worked your way up to really being kind of the head proofreader and copy person. What was the term? The okayer?
The okayer. There still are about five people who they start out as copy editors, and proofreading is also kind of a low-level job there. But what the okayers do is read a piece before it's scheduled to go to press. You read it, you give the editor your proof with your suggestions or anything you've caught. And the most fun really is these okaying meetings when you get to sit down with the editor, the fact checker, the author, sometimes the libel lawyer and another proofreader, and you all go over it together one page at a time and decide on the final changes. And then the okayer is the one that takes that proof away, has all the changes collated on one proof, and makes the changes, and then you go home to bed.
I mean, some of these writers must not enjoy a team of people analyzing their masterwork they've turned in.
The best writers love it. They love the process. How often does a writer have that many people paying close attention to it, you know? So it's and the best writers are the ones who are really open to feedback and response. It's the little ones who fight for every word. I like it my way, you know.
We need to take a quick break here. This is LiveWire Radio. We're talking to Mary Norris. Her latest book is Greek to Me, Adventures of the Comma Queen. We will be right back. Hey, it's Luke. Special thanks this episode to Christine Janice of Beaverton, Oregon, and Joanne Fox of Portland, Oregon. Christine and Joanne are part of the LiveWire member community, and they are generously supporting us with a donation each month. And we are so thankful for that support, because without wonderful, generous people like Christine and Joanne, we couldn't do the show. That's the reality of doing an independent public radio program. So thank you so much, Christine and Joanne, for making this episode of LiveWire possible. Welcome back to LiveWire Radio from PRI. I'm Luke Burbank. We have Elena Passarello here, and we're also talking to author and grammar expert Mary Norris from the Alberta Rose Theater here in Portland, Oregon. Mary, you're sort of known as the comma queen. Is that a title that you like having? Do you like being associated with knowing a lot about grammar, or do you worry that it kind of sounds a little pedantic, a little know-it-all-ish?
It does kind of scare people. I prefer prose goddess myself. So the comma queen label was invented by my literary agent. It took me a long time to get it, that there's an echo with drama queen. It took me a while to figure it out.
Oh, so you didn't even really get the reference. They just told you, Mary, go with this. It'll be big. And you were like, okay, fine. I guess I'm the comma queen now.
Yeah, I have a comma crown. I didn't bring it with me on this trip, but somebody made an aluminum crown with little dangling commas, all in historically correct typefaces.
Where was this crown presented to you?
At a party, you know.
Sounds like a hell of a party. I'm wondering where the line between inaccurate or incorrect grammar is and where sort of making new art, you know, saying something or writing something in a grammatically incorrect way in the service of a style of communicating, like jazz music or the blues don't always follow the quote-unquote rules of music, but that's why it's art. Like, how do you figure out which is which when you're either editing or even writing stuff yourself?
I guess you just have to feel everything individually. You know, you can't make any blanket decisions about what works and what doesn't. One of the oddest pieces I ever had to work on was about a rap singer called Earl Sweatshirt.
Oh, sure.
You know Earl?
Yeah. I do, actually. I mean, I don't know him, but I definitely know his work. He's from Odd Future.
Well, I had to decide in that piece which of all the obscenities might be spared. You know?
How do you also decide, I guess, I mean, language obviously does evolve, and a lot of people want to use pronouns that aren't traditionally associated with a person and things like that. When do you know, as a language expert, when it's time for us to all just kind of move forward with something and give up whatever the old system has been?
It becomes blazingly clear at some point. The New Yorker is conservative about language, and most print things used to be conservative about language. But it's, you know, I'm kind of evading that question because it's very hard. I fight a lot of slang terms. Hella.
Hella?
Hella.
Man, we are really at the opposite ends of this debate, Mary. Because I am trying to get hella more into the lexicon, and you're trying to get it less in the lexicon? That is hella rude.
Well, see, I can't use it, so I don't know how to use it. It did get in, by the way. The writer made a good case for it, so it did get in.
But, I mean, you just feel that it becomes, you say, blazingly clear, like when it's time to, how about, you know, like, selfie? Is selfie okay?
Yeah, selfie went right in, yeah.
Okay.
Something like a ringtone, when, you know, we started seeing ringtones just when we got cell phones, ringtone was not yet in the dictionary, and if it's not in the dictionary, it's going to be two words, ring and tone, but it looked ridiculous. And I knew it was on its way. Those compounds will have, they'll start out as two words, then for a while they'll have a hyphen, but it's inevitable that they're going, that hyphen is going to go and the word is going to be closed up. So every once in a while you think, let's just rush this one along. Okay, let's just make it ringtone one word. And
Your latest book is about, it's about the Greek language, and it's also about your trips to Greece. And I have to say, it involves more nudity than I was expecting. A book about grammar. Was this a shameless attempt to use sex to sell this book?
Yes.
Was that kind of anything that you deliberated over putting in? The idea of
yes,
you?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. I did wonder if this belonged in the book. And there's something that happened, actually, after the book came out. The nudity is in a chapter about Aphrodite, and it's about going to visit Cyprus and swimming in a swimming around some rocks, because I was told that if anyone who swam around those rocks would be beautiful forever. So, you know, I was thinking back later, and the person who told me that was the guy who rented me a car. So,
noted Greek historian Terry.
Anyway, I did swim nude around those rocks because I didn't want to make the mistake that Achilles' mother made when she held her son by the heel. Mm. And I thought, this should touch all of me. I even drank some of the water.
You didn't want to have an Achilles' heel of non-hotness?
Right, yeah, that would be perfect.
Well, I don't want to spoil the ending of your book about what happened to you in your nude swimming over there, but I just want to recommend it for everybody. Mary Norris is the guest. The book is Greek to Me. This is LiveWire Radio. All right, our musical guest this hour hail from right here in Portland. And they're a musical family, and we don't mean that figuratively. There are actually two couples in the band. The lead singers got married, and they had a baby. Their latest album is Deepest Light. Please welcome the Get Ahead to Livewire. The Get Ahead. Their latest album is Deepest Light. All right, that is going to do it for our show this week. Thank you, as always, to our fine, fine panel of guests. This week it was Mary Norris, Ryan O'Connell, Jackie Cation, and the Get Ahead. Livewire is brought to you in part by Alaska Airlines, Foley, and the Jupiter Hotel. Laura Haddon is our executive producer. Lauren Masterson is our development and marketing director. Tim Harkins is our production director. And Christian Seger is our marketing associate. Our producer and editor is Melanie Sevchenko. Caitlin Kunkel is our writer. Our house band is A. Walker Spring, Sam Tucker, and Ethan Fox Tucker. Molly Pettit is our technical director. Our house sound is by D. Neil Blake, and our on-air mix is by Corey Schreppel. Thanks, as always, to Carlson Audio. Additional funding provided by the Oregon Arts Commission and the James F. and Marion L. Miller Foundation. Livewire was created by Robin Tenenbaum and Kate Sokoloff. Our show is made possible by the generous support of our members. This week, we would like to thank members Rob and Carrie Peacock of Portland, Oregon. For more information about our show or how to get our podcast or our newsletter, head over to livewireradio.org. I'm Luke Burbank for Elena Passarello and the whole Livewire crew. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week.
PRI, Public Radio International.
Dear Livewire, when we first met, I was really shy. I had no idea we'd spend so much time together or that you'd be one to fill my heart with joy and make me want to be a better person. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know you were here. I was busy reading a review from one of our many, many rapturously smitten listeners. Oh, wait, actually, no, sorry. This is from Elena. Anyway, the point is, it would be really helpful if you wanted to leave us a review. Feel free to say really nice things about us, and we'll even read them now and then on the show. So you might hear your review of Livewire read on the program itself. Reviews help other people hear about the show, and then we can keep doing this for a long, long time because we love having this job. Thank you so much if you've left a review, and if you're about to leave a review, you can go ahead and do it right where you get the podcast.